Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Viewpoints podcast series here on the Market Moves podcast channel with my colleague, Burkhard Varnholt. Burkhard, welcome back. It's great to be back on the mic with you. I hope you enjoyed your summer holidays and managed to recharge a bit. The media had quite a few stories about Europe's heat wave, so that might be a good place to start and hear your summer take on that.
Sure, and great to be back, Dan. It's always a pleasure. Well, see, our summer was awesome, and that was because we headed up north. We got none of the heat, but some of Europe's great natural bounty. We spent 10 days on Lake Saimaa, that's Finland's largest lake, with about 17,000 beautiful small islands. To give you an idea, the loudest sound we could hear for 10 days was the occasional fish gasping for air or a bird singing its song. It was peace, nature, pleasant temperatures, and light. The famous white summer nights when the sun never sets. The New York Times, by the way, recently called this Lake Saimaa one of Europe's least known but most amazing summer destinations, and I can absolutely and only confirm that. But let me make a wider point here, which I think could be of interest to investors. You know, it's just seeing, and we toured the Nordics a little bit, also the other Scandinavian countries, and I know them reasonably from my occasional business trips there. And one thing that struck me is that the Nordics get a lot of things really right. I mean, while they're demographically small, they really punch above their weight when it comes to their economies, their stock markets, and of course, quality of life. They lead many rankings on nature, happiness, education, competitiveness, and city quality. They all run very efficient states with very low public debt and very open competitive economies. And the MSCI Nordic Country Index has been doing really well since this bull market and is still only trading at 16 times earnings. Stockholm, Sweden's capital, has more unicorns, they say, per capita than Silicon Valley. And on innovation, the number of patents per capita in Nordic country, that is only exceeded by Switzerland and closely followed by Singapore. So, you know, I think there's something to be said about the Nordics. And the wider point here is I love them for at least two reasons. First, I absolutely love Norway's top scorer, Erling Haaland. He's fantastic. And so are Norway's fans, whom we enjoyed sharing time with during our 2 days watching the World Cup in beautiful Oslo. But two, on a more serious note, I think the Nordics are also illustrating a wider case an investor can make for small nations. You know, it's just a very simple, you know, back on the envelope observation. I think in an era of complexity, it helps to get out of the middle. That's true for companies, I think, as well as for countries. So as an economy, in this era we're in, I think there's an argument you could make to say you should either be big or small, but not really in the middle. So you're either the greatest economy on earth, that's obviously the United States economy, or you're small and nimble like the Nordics or like Switzerland or like Singapore or Hong Kong or Ireland and others. I think it's telling that if you look at the European economies, Europe's biggest, largest economies like Germany, France, and the UK, they've been struggling for the last couple of years, even though their stock market's been doing reasonably well. But it's the small economies which have not only performed economically and on competitiveness and what have you, and been thriving by comparison, their stock markets have also led the field. And I think that's proving that these superior stock market returns also say something about the advantages of small nations in an increasingly complex world.
Well, Burkhard, that's very interesting to hear, and it's always good to compare your boots-on-the-ground experience with what's trending in the world of news and media. On that note, one of the dominant news items this summer is, of course, football. And I'm not sure how much you've been following it, Burkhard, but I know that you're writing a note on what athletes can teach leaders this week, and that's, of course, a very interesting topic to cover. Can you maybe share with our listeners some of your findings?
Sure. And yes, absolutely. I mean, I'm loving this World Cup. I must say, I think it's the best World Cup ever. I admit that initially I was skeptical about FIFA's decision to raise the number of teams from 32 to 45. I think I mentioned that in one of our previous podcasts, but I absolutely changed my mind. I think this is a great tournament. And on your question, I'm writing this note this week where I argue that leaders and also investors can learn a couple of, you know, deceptively simple secrets of success from some of these teams or athletes. Like, a lot of leaders or managers often seem almost obsessed with checking and measuring KPIs, but in sport, that's actually counterproductive. If you look at the top athletes, they always keep their eyes on the ball, not on the so-called KPIs. They know deep down that when the going gets tough, the winners trust their movements, their instinct. Messi, for example, is a good example. He's a football player who's constantly scanning the court 6 times every second, they say, and that's more than double the average top player. But when he scores, he doesn't think, he shoots. Because if you think, you're too late already. Let me give you another example of this. Roger Federer, one of Switzerland's longtime tennis champion, recently gave a most elegant commencement speech at Dartmouth College. And in that, he mentioned that in his entire career of playing, he said, 1,526 professional matches. Can you believe this? He only won 54% of all points, only a little over every second point he won. And despite all of this, he said, he actually won more than 80% of all matches. And I think what that statistic shows is that perfection in sports is an illusion. Even if the top professionals can't win more than a bit over every second point, that what sets the winners apart from those who don't win is that the winners understand it. They know that after they lose a point, they focus their eyes and their mind on the next ball. Or to put this into scientific language, because I did a lot of sports in my own free time, what these athletes do is they have the mental strength to tell their cerebrum, our brain's thinking and control center, to shut up. And instead, they allow their cerebellum, our brain's motoric control center, which drives our coordination, which drives our rapid physical reflexes, to take over. That's the deceptively simple secret sauce they have. And that's an enviable ability to turn on their autopilot. They don't think, they don't weigh their options. They execute, they shoot, they run, they win. Good leaders and investors, I think, can learn from this. You know, tune out the news. Doesn't make you a smarter, better, or happier person anyways. Maybe read a good book and then understand that it's better to prepare than predict. Keep your eye on the ball. Understand that time in the market beats timing the market. That's, I think, some of the things we can actually learn from athletes or these top teams.
Burkhardt, on that note, I guess that's a good moment to pick up on our last podcast where you explained why you think that the bull market is still alive. I assume that's still your view then.
Oh, you bet. Yes, I'm still in the roaring 20s bull market camp. I still believe that productivity is the globally most important and most widely underrated power behind earnings incomes and global disinflation. It's a sign of our times, and I think it'll continue to spread around the world for years. That's why we speak of the roaring 20s. And I also think, plus adding to that, that advanced economies will continue to throw lots of money at some of our generational challenges like climate, energy, demographics, power, and resources. So look, I'll absolutely stay invested at all times here.
Well, Burkhardt, very fascinating conversation today. As always, great to catch up with you. And thank you, Burkhardt, for sharing your thoughts and experiences, as always, with our listeners. And, of course, do look forward to picking back up with our conversation again soon.
Likewise. Thanks for having me, Dan. Always great to catch up with you. Speak again soon and have a good rest of the day. Thanks for now.
Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.